Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 7, Chapter 14, Text 36. Jivarashibhi akirna andakosha angripaha mahan tatmulatvat achuta ijya sarva jivatma tarpanam. Jivarashibhir akirna andako sangripo mahan tanmulatvar achuteja sarvajivatmatarpanam. Jivarashibhir akirna andako sangripo mahan tanmulatvada chuteja sarvajivatmatarpanam. Jivarasibir akirna andako sangripo mahan tanmulatvada chuteja sarvajivatmatarpanam. Ladies, please. Jivarashibhi, by millions and millions of living entities, akirna, filled up or spread over, andakosha, the whole universe. Angripa, like a tree. Mahan, very, very great. Tatmulatvat, because of being the root of this tree. Achyuta Ija, worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva, of all. Jiva Atma, living entities. Tarbanam, satisfaction. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. The entire universe, which is full of living entities, is like a tree whose root is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Achyuta, or Krishna. Therefore, simply by worshipping Lord Krishna, one can worship all living entities. So please repeat. The entire universe, which is full of living entities, is like a tree whose root is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Achyuta, or Krishna. Therefore, simply by worshipping Lord Krishna, one can worship all living entities. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 10.8, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti madva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha, which means, quote, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts, unquote. People are very much anxious to give service to other living entities, especially to the poor. But although they have manufactured many ways to give such help, actually they are expert in killing the poor living entities. This sort of service or mercy is not recommended in the Vedic wisdom. As stated in a previous verse, it has been decided, niruktam, by expert saintly persons, that Krishna is the root of everything, and that worshipping Krishna is worshipping everyone, just as supplying water to the root of a tree means satisfying all of its branches and twigs. Another point is that this universe is full of living entities from top to bottom, on every planet, jiva rasi bir akir naha. Modern scientists and so-called scholars think that there are no living entities on planets other than this one. Recently, they have said that they have gone to the moon but did not find any living entities there. But Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures do not agree with this foolish conception. There are living entities everywhere, not only one or two, but jiva rasi bhi, many millions of living entities. Even on the sun there are living entities, although it is a fiery planet. The chief living entity on the sun is called Vivasvan. Imam Vivasate Yogam Proktavan Aham Anyayam. All the different planets are filled with different types of living entities according to different living conditions. To suggest that only this planet is filled with living entities and that others are vacant is foolish. This betrays a lack of real knowledge. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Jiva Rashibir Akirna Andako Sangrapo Mahan Tan Muladvad Achyuteja Sarvajivatma Tarmanam. The entire universe, which is full of living entities, is like a tree whose root is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Achyuta, Krishna. Therefore, simply by worshipping Lord Krishna, one can worship all living entities. So one of the points that is Srila Prabhupada is making here is that he's pretty much ridiculing the scientist's idea of seeing is believing, because what we see is not necessarily all there is. This is the first thing. In other words, even if they did go to the moon, which is of doubtful authenticity, but nonetheless, many believe it and some don't believe it. But even if they did and they didn't, all they saw was rocks, that does not mean that there are other living entities there. Because living entities are given specific types of bodies which equip them for living in a particular atmosphere. A good example is perhaps right here on this planet. We have human beings, but human beings can't walk into the ocean, go underwater, and just stay there. Unless, of course, they have been trained in yogic mystic powers and they can live under the water. Like, what was his name? Subari Muni, I think, had that power. He used to observe the fishes, and one day he got into a lot of trouble. But we won't go into that here today. Can't live underwater. But yet a fish can live underwater because he has a body which equips him, which is suitable for living in water. He has gills, whereas we have lungs. And if the lungs fill up with water, then we die. Similarly, in different planets, Srila Prabhupada mentions that, for example, on the sun, if scientists were to invent a ship that could reach the sun, again, they would see just fire, because they are seeing things only with their material eyes, which allow only for a certain amount of vibratory rate. But Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the sun planet, or in the sun, the beings there have fire bodies, just as the beings here on this planet have primarily earth bodies. So there are different gradations and different dimensions of of types of bodies which are suitable for different atmospheres. But it does not mean we can see them with these material eyes which are suitable for seeing things on this particular planet. Another example is that, if you look at your hand and you look at it and it's clean, it's clear, it's just been washed. And yet there may be thousands of little tiny living entities crawling around your hand, but we can't see them. We can't, because the eye is limited by what it can see, its extent of vision. But if you take a microscope and then you look at your hand, which magnifies what you see thousands and thousands of times, Then you begin to see things which we could not see just with our naked eye. You see all sorts of bacteria walking around, crawling about, fighting, leaping up, leaping away, and so forth. So there's more to what meets the eye than what it apparently sees. And this is the important point that Srila Prabhupada is making here, that all they're seeing and they're judging is on the basis of what they see, and yet, as I have just given the illustration, years and years ago, before the microscope was invented, when people looked at their palm, they would say, yes, it's clean, it's clear, there's nothing on it. And yet, later on, they were to find out there is something on it. Similarly, even when they look up into the sky, going back about 75 years ago, the telescopes could only see so much, and they would say, well, this is what's up in the sky. And then as technology developed, they began to see more and more as the the optical ability of the lenses was able to give a closer and closer vision of what is in the sky. So then they began to see more and more planets. They began to see comets. And recently in the Milky Way, they saw literally millions of universes. I don't know if anybody have caught that in the news. But in the Milky Way, yes, millions of universes. And it just conformed completely to what was mentioned in the Bhagavatam, that there are millions and millions of universes out there. And that is just in one little area, one circumscribed area. So the universe is far greater, far mightier, far more magnificent than we can judge by our limited senses. But the scientists like to believe that what they see, that's only what they will believe. Until they can see it, perhaps with some other technological advancement, they won't believe it. It reminds me of a story that somebody told me, that in the university there was a professor, and he was trying to prove that there is no God. So he asked his class students, has anybody ever seen God? And everybody shook their head, no. Has anybody ever heard God? And everybody shook their head, no. And then, has anybody ever touched God? And then again, everybody shook their head, no. And the professor said, well, that proves it. There is no God. So one student, he got up and raised his, yes, come on up. So the student looked at the head of the professor, then he looked back at the class, and he said, has anybody ever seen this professor's brain? And everybody went. And he said, well, that proves it. There is no. So much for logic and so much for proving. We can't prove things necessarily by what we see and by what we smell and by what we hear. The dogs can hear things that we cannot. Dogs can smell things that we cannot, because the level of sensitivity or perceptibility is different. So therefore, Prabhupada wants us to not take very Srila Prabhupada wants us to not take very seriously some of these statements that are made, that there is no God unless you see God, and then how do we even know he is God? I mean, even if he did one miracle, like raising Govardhan Hill, he would say, well, that was, he just lucked out on that one. That's what they would say. It was just a lucky little miracle. That he must have learned some particular power. They would always find some excuse due to their speculative mentality, due to their doubtful mentality, actually due to their sinful mentality. And the sinful aspect of the mentality is that they want to be God. They want to be lords. They want to be in the limelight. They want everyone to look at them, to admire them, to adore them. And if anyone shows him or herself to be very important or very valuable or very capable or very powerful, they like to somehow shoot him or her down, because that person is overshadowing him or her. We all came into this world to be lords of one sort or another. As it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, when Queen Puranjani was lamenting over the death of her husband, Brahman approached her, who happened to have been no other than Lord Krishna himself, and he said, "My dear friend, even though you cannot immediately recognize me, can't you remember that in the past you had a very intimate friend? Unfortunately, you gave up my company to accept a position as an enjoyer of this material world." So that was the cause of her lamentation. Now, another point, and the cause of generally everybody's lamentation, because they come into this world, they want to lord it over, they become attached to some position. You might be a president, you might be a vice president, you might be head of a corporation, you may be a multimillionaire, you may be extremely beautiful woman or handsome man, you might be extremely wealthy, or very powerful and influential, or very famous, or perhaps very knowledgeable. You have many PhDs attached to your name. So we become attached to these positions and feel that we are somehow superior, greater, higher, better, bigger than others in this universe. But when somehow we are attacked by illness and and we are laid low, as the saying goes, and we no longer can function in those different capacities, and people are no longer admiring us or looking up to us or glorifying us or adoring us, we feel like we've been reduced to zero, to nothing. Because previously everyone was talking about us. We were famous, or we were wealthy, or we were handsome or beautiful. Now we become old, we become decrepit, we're limping along, and hardly can we even run, hardly can we even think. And death is on the way, it's coming closer and closer. So in that situation, a person feels like he's worthless, he's useless, he has nothing anymore. And this is a very lamentable and very pitiful situation, because actually he has everything, but he doesn't know it. He's unaware of it. He's ignorant of this. Has everything in the sense that Krishna is within him. And in Krishna there is pure bliss, there is pure peace, there is pure strength, there is pure love, there is pure happiness. Right to Srila Prabhupada's very end, he was still translating the Bhagavatam. He was still feeling the ecstasy of God consciousness. He was not worrying about his illnesses. He didn't even care about eating. That was unimportant to him, because the most important thing was him to think of Krishna continuously, so he would translate. And the translation was, of course, divine words, which had come initially or originally from Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada showed us the perfect way in which one should leave the world, namely with our minds fixed upon the Lord, and we don't then feel like we're nothing. We don't feel empty. We don't feel worthless. We don't feel useless. We don't feel like we're good for nothing. We don't feel like has-beens, because in one sense we were never-beens. Never-beens in the sense that this body was here and then it's gone. So one who thinking that it's going to go on and on and on ad infinitum is just living in a fool's dream. So when you see it today, you actually have to see it in the future. It will be a never been. And whatever it has acquired will be lost, will be gone. But not with attachment to Krishna and to Krishna's service. That is forever available to the devotee. It is available because whether we live in this world, or whether we live in the hellish world, or the lower planets, or the heavenly planets, or the eternal planet, Vaikuntha, Goloka, wherever we are, if we have acquired the habit and the attachment to that habit of serving Krishna, feeling the pleasure of giving pleasure to Krishna, when all we have in mind is just to please Him, to satisfy Him, to fulfill Him, whether it's through food, whether it's through music, whether it's through writing, whether it's through some mechanical method, But if we are doing all this for the pleasure of Krishna, then we are guaranteed his blessings, blessings of the spiritual master who engineered us, the service that we have, blessings from the Supreme Lord. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. Therefore, one should always remember and praise the spiritual master at least three times a day. Let us offer our humble obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. So with that understanding, as it is mentioned, when we have the blessings, the mercy of the spiritual master, we then get the mercy, the blessings of Krishna. And with the mercy and the blessings of Krishna, he gives more and more of himself to us. This is his gift. This is his reward. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And what is that reward? As he mentions to the gopis of Vrindavan, I can't give you anything. No matter what I would give you for all the love you have given to me, I would fall short billions and billions of times. The only thing I have to offer you is myself. So please be satisfied with your own devotional service, because it is through that service that you have won me. You have conquered me. You now control me. Whatever you want from me is yours. Your pure love has done this. It has literally squeezed my heart, and I am completely at your beck and call. So this is a very high, very advanced level of Krishna consciousness. And what makes it rather odd and novel is that the gopis never thought of themselves as advanced souls. They just were, they did what was spontaneously necessary for them to do, and that was to always think of Krishna. As Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee, offer obeisances and worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Of course, the gopis didn't really worship Krishna. They just served him. That was their worship, actually. Not worship in the formal sense, I mean, as the Brahmins do in the temples. But whatever they did, whether they made tasty cookies for him, or whether they massaged his feet, or whether they just looked at his beautiful face, even that was a service to Krishna, because the more they used to make their faces up so beautifully, not out of egocentricity, but because they knew that Krishna liked to look at their beautiful face, and that gave him happiness. It wasn't that, oh, I'm so gorgeous, I'm so beautiful, I'm so wonderful, and I'm the best, the queen of the ball, or the bell of the ball. It wasn't like that. So when Krishna would look at them, he would get, yes, great delight in looking at these beautiful faces, and he would become overwhelmed with even more happiness than he normally would have. They increased his happiness by their beauty, and then they, seeing his increase of beauty, their beauty would increase even more. And similarly, it was like a competition going on as to who would become more and more and more and more beautiful. And in this acquirement or in this manifestation of beauty, they were experiencing different higher and higher levels of ecstasy. So the gopis of Vrindavan, their only thought was, how can we please Krishna? How can we see Krishna so that we can please him? And when they worked, when they served, when they milked cows, when they were in the, when they were picking vegetables, whatever it happened to be, their minds were always on the Supreme Lord. So that should be our goal. We can't imitate them because they had, from the time they were young girls, they had a natural, spontaneous, intense desire to just want to serve Krishna, look at Krishna, and offer themselves to Krishna. So we should be praying for that same desire to be attracted, as Lord Chaitanya mentions. O my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benediction to living beings. Your holy name alone can render all benediction to living beings. But what is the next line, please? Yet you have, yes, thank you. You have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. In these transcendental names, you've invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. Oh, my Lord, out of kindness, you enable us to easily approach you by your holy name. But I am so unfortunate because I have no attraction for them. So that's us. We may have no attraction for them, but as Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Instruction, we are suffering from avidya, or the ignorance. And like a person who has jaundice, or the jaundice of avidya, he takes this rock candy, which is sweet. At first it's bitter. It has no attraction. But the more he takes the rock candy, the more it becomes the cure for the yellow jaundice of avidya. And so what happens is that as a result, he becomes cured and he can then taste the sweetness of the rock candy. Similarly, as we chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, as we taste this holy name over and over again, ideally in a mood of appreciation and a mood of glorification, in a mood that we have gotten the greatest of the greatest of the greatest, greatest of the greatest of the greatest mantras in existence. As we taste this, and when we have this idea that it is so precious, so relishable and cherishable and treasurable, that it is so great and so perfect, if we chant with this idea that we have been awarded, we have been given something so amazing, so wonderful, so glorious. As Haridas Thakur would chant, he would chant all day, all night, because he knew what he was chanting was all perfect and all powerful. And because he was extracting from it the transcendental bliss and peace and strength and knowledge which comes from such an attitude when one is chanting the holy name. Therefore, one can go on chanting it unlimitedly. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower, lower than the straw on the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Why? Because one is flooded with transcendental bliss. We get this sometimes in our kirtans. You just want to go on chanting. And I see some of the kirtan leaders, they want to go on playing and playing because of the bliss which they are experiencing. And also they are seeing that so many others are experiencing the same thing. So Krishna has given us such a bonus, such an award, in spite of the fact that we have been so sinful, we have committed so many wrongs, we have neglected Krishna, ignored him, denied him, decried him, all of this. Notwithstanding the fact that he feeds us, he clothes us, he shelters us, he educates us, and when we're sick, he medicates us. He gives us all these blessings. And yet still we are indifferent, we're negligent, we're thoughtless. We're thinking about this, that, and the other thing. So many things which are unimportant. Of course, some of these things may be important. But we have to prioritize. And Krishna should come before anything and everything, because without Krishna we have nothing. And with Krishna we have everything. This is the important teaching that Srila Prabhupada has so wholeheartedly and so graciously given us. With Krishna, we have everything. We may not even be, we may be poor physically. We may not even be eating three meals a day. Of course, generally, Krishna sees to it that as far as New Dwarka goes, you can get six meals a day. There's no end to the prasadam here. It's endless. And not only that, but breakfast is like a big Sunday feast. So Krishna is seeing to, he's reciprocating, no question about it. For those who like to eat, they will be fully taken care, they are being fully taken care of. But even if you don't, let us say your situation was such, you don't have, you're only getting one meal, or maybe not even a meal. Still, a person who is in full Krishna consciousness, who is appreciating all the blessings that he has already or she has already received, is filled with joy and happiness and understands that there must be some good reason as to why he or she is not being given, for example, food for that day. Maybe it is to teach us what some of the people who are deprived are feeling. So sometimes by good, strong hunger, we get to become compassionate to those who have little, which gives us another deeper and stronger motivation to get these books out to people who need to receive them. Because it is by worship of Krishna, dependence upon Krishna, love of Krishna, honoring Krishna, celebrating Krishna, applauding Krishna, and depending upon him completely, that we get his grace, we get his mercy, we get his love, we get his guidance, we get his kindness. And if we get that, then what else do we have to look after? What else do we have to look for? We've gotten everything that is necessary. We are fulfilled. We are complete. We are satisfied. The heart is no longer hungering after anything because it has achieved, like a cloud which has been riven and it is apart from its mother cloud. It then finally comes together with it. I don't mean that we merge into Krishna and become Krishna. I mean that our hearts merge with Krishna's heart and our love blends with his love. And he's glad to increase our love with his love. And when our love is increased, we are glad and eager to serve him more with that love that he has given us. And so it is cyclical, it is continuous. And we have fulfillment, we have satisfaction, we have everything. And Srila Prabhupada, by his kindness, by his mercy, by his infinite grace, he has given all this to us, so we should never stop thanking him. I know I have to keep doing, I have to keep reminding myself. I'm always taking everything for granted, thinking I'm so important, I'm so valuable, I'm so this and so that, I'm so nothing. But Srila Prabhupada is so everything. And because he is so everything, therefore I should be remembering him every moment. But due to selfishness and self-love, I don't. And so I pray for the prayers of all the Vaishnavas that maybe one day I will remember him a few times every 5 minutes. One lady I told you about in Bellingham, I just came back from Bellingham, Washington. She's a school teacher. She teaches students who are have difficulties in learning. So she said the way she remembers Krishna and Prabhupada is she has a little alarm clock in her classroom and she sets it to go off. Yes, every 15 minutes, all the students looking, and she doesn't do anything. She just closes her eyes for a few seconds, and she says, yes, Krishna, thank you for reminding me of yourself. And then she goes on and does her teaching. So there are different ways in which we can remember Krishna if we desire it. It's not going to happen automatically. It's going to happen by volition, by our determination, by our intention. And without that, it will never happen. So we have to get heavy on ourselves. We've got to, as they say, heavy ourselves out. We have to scold ourselves a little. That I've got to try harder to remember Krishna more. It's not enough to merely do the action. But Krishna says, therefore, Arjuna, you should always remember me. You should always remember me in the form of Krishna. And at the same time, perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me. And your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will come to me without a doubt. So he's saying that while you're doing your action, try to remember me. If you can't remember me always and constantly, then at least remember me to the degree that you can. And that will increase by the grace of Krishna. So I thank you all very much for your kind attention. Are there any questions or any comments? Yes, sir. Banabhata Prabhuji. Yeah.
The first question relates to what Srila Prabhupada said in the beginning of the purport. He says people are very much anxious to give service to other communities, especially the poor, but although they've manufactured ways to give help, actually they're expert in killing poor little communities. So my question is that in relation to this big typhoon that just hit the Philippines, for example, and all the aid that's being given to these people,
killing living entities. And so although, you know, countries, people want to do service, they want to help these people who are, you know, hundreds and thousands who are suffering, my question is, what is the actual benefit these people are getting from it? And is it more doing more harm than good? And as devotees, should we be thinking proactively in how we could, for example, organize on such a level where we could distribute prasadam in emergency situations like that?
Yeah. That's a very good question. And I'll try my best to answer the questions that is made. First point that Srila Prabhupada is making there is that these are only stopgap relief missions. They don't really solve anything in the ultimate analysis. They may give temporary relief. And some people who are relieved temporarily, they may feel, well, yes, at least there's somebody out there who cares. When somebody receives some care in a desperate situation, he or she may then feel that since somebody cared for me, maybe when somebody else is in a desperate situation, if I can be of help, then I will care for them. So that's a mode of goodness type of response or reaction that can come from that. I know many people who have been helped as a result of the help, result of different kinds of healings or whatever, they felt that they wanted to do something good for somebody else. However, that's not enough. That's what Srila Prabhupada is saying. That will not get you out of this material world at all. All that will do is you have a little bit of motive goodness, but it never goes beyond just wanting to help because somebody scratched my back, now I'll scratch somebody else's back. That's a very meager motivation by which to operate. What Srila Prabhupada is yearning for, and one of the reasons he came here, is that we should be giving them, and it goes, and it's mentioned in the purport, we should be trying to give them Krishna in whatever form we can, because that will go beyond being a temporary stopgap relief measure. When someone receives Krishna in the holy name, as you just mentioned in prasadam, for example, there is a Food for Life Global, and they do distribute prasadam worldwide, and they do distribute prasadam to persons in what we call desperate, calamitous situations like the one that you just mentioned. So they're getting out, but we have a long way to go before we can get to these people who are in desperate situations, not only the food that they need, but to give them Krishna in the food. And when they have Krishna in the food, there are two things happening. Not only is the belly being satisfied, but the soul is being awakened. And when the soul becomes awakened, that means it begins to ask the question, you know, why is all this happening? What is the cause of it? What is the root of it? Why am I receiving this type of suffering? So when a person begins to ask that question, that's the beginning, really, of spiritual life, because if they take it to the next step, then they look for, Krishna sends a devotee there, or may have a devotee there, gives him a book, looks at it. So many persons I've heard this, you know, this is just what I was looking for. This is the answer to what I was, and I've been thinking about this for months and months, and I couldn't find the answer. Here it is. So, but what provokes that desire to know? It is prasadam. It is Krishna. And when Krishna is in the heart, because when you give prasadam, it stimulates the heart. It stimulates the soul, so to speak, to ask these questions. Why am I suffering? Where am I coming from? Why am I here? Etc. So, therefore, trying to strike a balance in my answer to your question, I would say, as Srila Prabhupada says, I'm not disagreeing in any way whatsoever, is that the relief effort is only a very temporary stopgap, and in general, it doesn't really go very far.
Thank you, Prabhu. My second question relates, and you touched upon it when you mentioned that, you know, we can't see the thousands or millions of living entities who are in our hand, but through advanced instrumentation, we can actually know there's so many living entities there. And now technology is becoming more and more advanced. And so many theories that scientists have had about, for example, they believed that living entities couldn't live within a certain temperature. And they found out that that's actually not true. They've been able to actually observe living entities in you know, extremely hot situations. And so I'm wondering, you know, because that's happening and they're able to observe these things, it just logically follows that wouldn't it make them more conservative? I mean, with all these, you know, advanced ways to perceive things, it seems to me that it actually gives more credence to the idea that there is God and that there is life on so many different planets that they didn't even, you know, consider or couldn't even perceive before. So why is it that as they discover more and more things like that, they don't become more inquisitive as to, you know, understand and try to understand that there is actually a God or some, you know, something behind that?
Yes. Well, first of all, I might say that there are many scientists who actually do believe in God. All scientists are not opposed. In fact, they see this, but they don't always call it God. They may call it the supreme intelligence, because when they actually begin to take apart the mechanics of even a human body, they can see that the intelligence that it took to put it together to work the way it does would be a supreme, there has to be a supreme intelligence which is above and beyond all human intelligence that they have to concede. There's no question about that. However, Srila Prabhupada makes this point this point very often, and that is, again, it is this idea of not wanting to concede that there is a higher person than we. It's called the human being ego. In other words, there is nobody higher or greater or better or bigger than the human being. And there are certain scientists who will stick to this particular idea, unless you show me, unless you prove it to me, so forth. Then there are scientists who are a little bit more avant-garde, and they will concede that there may be other living beings on other planets. There are some who actually believe that, and they actually do research to try to prove that. So it is this false ego, you see, which holds a person back. This false ego, which in effect says that we're a human being, and therefore we're the greatest, we're the highest, we're the biggest, we're the best, and until you can prove it, you can show me. Now, as you just mentioned, there are so many different scientific inventions which are coming forth, which, as you said, that should lead one to believe that there's more to what we see and hear and smell than what appears. Nonetheless, the false ego dies very hard. And therefore, it's this intransigence, this idea that we're the best, we're the highest, we're the greatest, until you show me. There are certain people who are just like that, that we call them thick-headed, hard-hearted, call it whatever you want, until they themselves may get a serious or severe case of cancer, and some saint happens to heal them, puts his hand on their chest, and that, and they're miraculously healed. This happened thousands and thousands of times in early Christianity. That's exactly what would happen. People had this same mentality, and these people would be healed, there must be God coming through this person. So they conceded that possibility, you see. So if we want to get more converts, it wouldn't be a bad thing if we not deliberately and intentionally deliberate mystic powers, that would be a waste of our time. But if we would develop the purity, the sincerity, the love, the humility that some of these saints developed were given as gifts, these types of powers, then people who were very opposed, very intransigent, very hard-hearted, they might very well melt away as a result of their personal situation having been so completely relieved 180 degrees, they're willing to concede something that previously they would not. But unless those things happen, generally they stick, they're diehard. But then there are others who do gradually change. I've seen both. Yeah. Okay, I think we can call it quits. I'm sorry for holding you so long. My apologies, and thank you so much for listening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to Sri Rukmini and Dwarkadish ki jai. Hare Krishna. Haribol.